At Audi Columbus, we have the perfect luxury vehicle for you. Our award-winning service ensures a premium experience when buying or maintaining your car. The process is entirely digital. Whether buying online or in store, it's fast, easy, and transparent. Right now, get a 2025 Audi Q5 for 5.99% for 72 months. Located by the airport, drop by or explore our offerings at audicolumbus.com. Discover the service that sets us apart. Come see why it's better to buy at Buyers. See dealer for details. Offer ends April 30th, 2025.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. We're here. It's happening. It's the biggest episode of the year. The last episode of ELC in 2022. Can you believe it? Holy moly.
The biggest episode of the year.
And we are listening to DLC.
We're glad to have you, especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run, or even if you're just recovering from an eggnog overload or some sort of carpal tunnel gift unwrapping injury, whatever the case. We're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week. This week, we're determining our list of champions. And it comes to you absolutely free, thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you. Their generosity, their holiday spirit, their spirit of giving brings the show to you completely free. In exchange, they get some cool stuff, ladies and gentlemen. They get video versions of the show on demand. They get ad-free episodes in their RSS feed. And they, at a certain tier, get bonus content like gifts underneath their holiday tree. You've got spoiler chats, like the God of War Ragnarok spoiler chat we did not too long ago. You've got the paid DLC midweek extravaganza. This week, we did the holiday spectacular featuring not one Bashinsky, not two Bashinskys, but all the Bashinsky siblings, Lana, her twin sister, her brothers, her husband. It was a holiday party, the likes of which, frankly, this podcast has never experienced, ladies and gentlemen. And on top of all that, patrons get Feeling This, the show that Christian Spicer and Alex Solman do. This week, they're talking about QTEs. Oh, my goodness. You don't want to miss all that, and you can get, you can be a part of it. You can get all of that in your stocking and make sure this show continues into its 10th year by going to patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, oh my gosh, this show, the flagship show, DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week. And it is the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also, games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who is the enemy of best, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
You're the favorite around. I mean, that's a catchy song someone should do, I think. Like, you know, you're about to get into a big fight. You're the favorite. Oh, you're the favorite this round. Okay. That's pretty good. Friend, I just thought of that.
I had a friend who legitimately thought that song was, you're the best in town. Like if you went to the next town over, you're probably not the best there, but
I mean, that's how I was in Street Fighter, and my town, I was the best. Then it went online. Right. Speaking of, I got my kit on, and then it went online, and it was like, you suck. You suck at Street Fighter.
This is, ladies and gentlemen, this is my favorite episode of the year. Every year we do DLC. This is it. This is the one. This is the one where we pick our favorites of the year.
Oh, crap. I'll be right back.
unprepared Christian, as always. Christian thought this was just a normal episode. No, nothing normal about it. In fact, it is so not normal, ladies and gentlemen, that we have to have the one guest on this show that gets their own introductory theme song.
Who's that coming on the podcast today?
Taormina, ladies and gentlemen.
It is I have arrived.
You're back to save us from ourselves, as usual, every year. Thank you for being with us, Anthony. Thank you for being our yearly addition to the favorite episode, favorites of the year episode.
I look forward to it every year. It's a great time. I am the antithesis of Christian in that I love the end of the year, like going through my favorite movies and TV shows and, I don't know, favorite meals I had that year. I don't know. Make a list. Lists are fun.
Oh, I love lists, and I love that you said favorites.
I like ranking things.
You can't walk. That podcast does not lie. We all heard you. You are on the same page. We all are in.
I rank my children. That's why I only had one.
That makes sense.
Yeah, if you're watching on the video version, we're all in our festive sweaters. Look at this. I got the Beholder. Christian's got Street Fighter.
I have Clippy.
Clippy.
That's so good, Anthony. It's also a Yule log for some of it. I got a Hades Yule log, which I never heard of before, but it's a video game, apparently. So
you never heard of Yule log?
They're making a second one.
Yule log 2?
Making a second Yule log? Boy, that thing was going to burn. I thought it was going to burn forever. Let me explain to you, ladies and gentlemen, why this episode is so great, especially if you are joining us for the first time. Welcome. Thank you. Here's the thing about the end of the year. There are countless other video game podcasts and websites that will give you their top tens of the games that came out in 2022. This is common. I'm sure you've seen numerous top tens. Exactly, Christian. Christian's giving the old thumbs down. Top tens, we say, too easy. Too easy. You got 10 slots to fill with games. Oh, yeah, anybody can do that. What if I told you here at DLC, we challenge ourselves to come up with a top five? That's right. It's cutthroat. It's brutal. Only the best of the best can make our top five lists of the year. And then we're going to do another five. That other five is not 6 through 10. No. It's even better than 6 through 10. It's a list of hidden gems, of dark horses, of special
10 through
games.
15. It's 10.
We're just going to skip five. We do 1 through 5 and then
then we do the bottom 100.
95 to 100.
We're going to do number 27, number 34, number 52. That would be amazing, actually.
My 32nd favorite game of this year. It was a close one, Jeff, between 32nd and 33rd, which I will not tell you what my favorite
was. No, we're not covering
was.
Those. We're not talking about those numbers. Not interesting. No, we do our hidden gems, our dark horses. Five games that deserve to be talked about again that probably won't make most people's top tens of the year and yet still deserve a little shine at the end of the year on DLC. We're also going to be talking about the top stories of the year. We do a story of the week here on DLC every week. We're going to do story of the year, as we often do in this episode at this time. And as we joked at the beginning of the show, we're not allowed to say best. Christian, years ago, put his foot down. The one thing that Christian said, you know what? You shall not pass. And I as little as I respect Christian, I had to respect that. You know what I mean? And to explain to you exactly why we say favorite and not best, the lyrical wizard, the musician of all musicians, our friend Sean Madigan, has this little ditty for you.
DLC's personal favorite games of the year. Based on an incomplete sampling.
That's right. Based on an incomplete sampling, we have not played every game that came out this year. But our own personal favorites, that's what we're going to mark down. You're gonna hear our personal favorites. By the way, Sean Madigan, thank you so much. As always, it's always fun. The Anthony Taormina song, the Game of the Year song, composed, performed by Sean Madigan and his family. And they also do a holiday song every year, an original holiday song. We put it in the end of the episode last week. But if you'd like to check it out, you can find it on their website alongside a lot of other cool original music. Madigan.me. It's Madigan.me. Visit it. Get some great music. And thanks, as always, to Sean and his family for that. All right, fellas. Let's start talking about the stories of the year. As I always do around this time, I listened back to our episode last year at this time. And we were saying the story of the year for 2021. I started off the episode saying the story of the year for 2021 is the same as the story of the year for 2020, and that is COVID and the supply chain delays. And we all speculated as to whether that would still be the story of the year in 2022. And I think we can't deny that it's still a significant part of the story. There's still a lot of supply chain issues, still hard for people to get consoles and hardware of all kinds. I think obviously less than it was at that time. We were looking down the barrel of Omicron starting up, if you can even remember that time. And I think it's worth being a little grateful that I feel like some of that has lessened. It's certainly, you know, the pandemic is still wreaking havoc with large parts of the world and is certainly a health risk for many, many people. But I guess it's good that we're not sitting here a third year in a row going, that's the undeniable, still biggest story of the year, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For better or worse, it's become a below the fold story. Which below the fold is when newspapers were things that when news was printed instead of doom scrolled past. It is still, and here in LA, cases are back up in a big way among all the other respiratory illnesses that are spreading. But yes, it does not seem to be the story the way it was before. And what a year it's been in terms of that, thinking back to pre Omicron variant and where we were as we sat down to do this last year. It's both been a million years and half a second, yeah. You know, at the same time. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. I would submit to you guys that the biggest story of the year is, as you know, in a lot of ways, was major stories of 2021 as well. These huge acquisitions. We saw Embracer Group acquire a number of video game companies. And of course, that Microsoft acquisition of Activision Blizzard King that, you know, now we really don't know the future of, as the federal government has objected to it formally. But Anthony, would you agree that those are sort of looming large as the biggest video game stories that could shape the next 5 to 10 years of what we all experience in the hobby?
Yeah, I think probably throughout all of next year, maybe it'll get settled sooner, but it seems like there's a lot of, you know, obstacles in Microsoft's way in terms of acquiring Activision Blizzard King, just as far as concerns about competition being lessened, concerns about how Call of Duty is handled and being available on PlayStation platforms. I think everybody outside of Microsoft seems to want to stop it, you know, and prevent it from happening. So I think there's going to be enough in the way and the way the legal system works and all that stuff. And also even outside of the US legal system, that it's probably going to be a part of the conversation throughout all of next year. Yeah. Somebody who used to practice the law is around. Maybe he has some ideas.
Christian Spicer, I think he's referring to you.
Oh, wow. I mean, yes, I agree with you, Anthony, but also I think Jeff, what was it, 4 weeks ago on this very show, I was like, it's done. It's a done deal. I still think it's a done deal. I'm generally a favor of regulation. Like I encourage and enjoy, that's the wrong word, but I encourage.
A favor or in favor?
I'm a favor of, I'm a style of, I'm a flavor of, I am a flavor of regulation. I am a flavor of eggnog. I'm in favor of regulations, a lot of regulations. I think that it's good, often good. Seatbelts, love, I love a seatbelt. I love a seatbelt. Helmet on a motorcycle, big fan, love it.
Christian regulated this episode every year. Can't call it best.
It's true.
It's Spicer regulation right there.
But then he breaks all the rules of the episode, so it's true. he's also not in favor of the regulation.
He's not seatbelt wearing, no helmet
the
wearing.
The only rule is you can't
DLC
say.
DLC putting on his list guy, that's what he is.
No, I just, my number five is two games.
See,
turtle, it's a turducken of three games.
You guys jest, but I'm not saying that there are this year. Yes, I do have six games as my number five game, but other years, those are clearly other games that I discussed to decide what my number 32nd game would be. Anthony,
it's the poor guy that makes the Excel spreadsheet that takes care of the list always is like, I have to add a cell, but now it's blank for the other two.
My favorite game of the year every year is how do I make this game of the year spreadsheet that our community so beautifully maintains a little uglier.
It's true.
Every year.
Anthony showed up in full support of the spreadsheet guy wearing his Clippy shirt. You know, he's
like, I'm all about
spreadsheet. You know, come on.
Merge cells horizontally, vertically, do it.
To this merger acquisition talk, again, I am a flavor of regulation. It really seems like the FTC does not have a leg to stand on here. And I'm kind of shocked. Not that they're trying to challenge it, but the documents that they submitted in this first round, this first volley, so to speak, of trying to stop it. And I don't know if they felt rushed and they needed to get something out, but typically of something of this magnitude, I don't think you'd see an unforced error the way that the FTC seemed to have provided here with that first filing about claiming something that Microsoft didn't do in Europe. You know, they said this, they did this, when in fact that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And so I agree with Anthony that I think the machinery of the government, federal government, is often slow and winding. I mean, sometimes the IRS doesn't even audit a sitting president for 2 years when they're supposed to do it every year. And so I could see this taking a long time, but it's also, Jeff, $70 billion, and these are very
69 and change, Christian. Come on. Nice.
Well, I don't like to say the devil's number.
Nice.
And they also are well connected to government. I don't know. I still think this thing goes through. I know this isn't the predictions episode, but I think by the time we sit down to do this again next year, it will have gone through. And I think we'll be discussing what the ramifications, you know, it hasn't changed much. Yeah. When do we see this? I think that'll be the next part of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, that's the big one that is occupying all of our attention right now, because that's the one that hangs in question. But this was a huge year of acquisitions that just slid right through without any friction at all, including Sony acquiring Bungie and Haven. And Embracer Group, listen to what this year, Crystal Dynamics, Eidos Montreal, Square Enix Montreal, Tuxedo Labs, Limited Run Games, Tripwire Interactive, Singtrix. They got the IP rights to Lord of the Rings. Lara Croft, right? The Tomb Raider franchise. It's not like there aren't acquisitions happening constantly. And I think that's a big, big part of the story of 2022 in video games, is how everybody wants somebody. And you know, this just continues a trend that's been, you know, going on for a while. You know, we were talking about that big megaton announcement of Microsoft getting Bethesda, you know, just last year. So, you know, it's continuing, and it'll be interesting if the federal government is able to pump the brakes on this or not. I think that's going to be a really interesting question to see the answer to.
And it's where we bucked the trend, Jeff. I mean, DLC was unacquired.
well, the number of offers we had to turn down, Christian, are, you know, zero. But that doesn't mean that we won't accept more offers in the future.
I mean, the FTC said we can't talk about it, so I will just be vague. But when we got shut down for that $11 billion...
You know what's actually funny, Christian? You make this joke, but if you really think about it, in 2022, we got the opposite of acquired.
That's what I said. We got unacquired. That's how I started it. That was my joke. Thanks for getting it.
Yeah. I did not catch it, but it is, we used to be acquired, and now we're independent. Thank you, patrons, for making us able to survive in the unacquired nature of, but again, if you're listening, and you have literally any dollars whatsoever, we're on the table.
I mean, Disney. If Disney wants us for our IP of Mark from Marketing, you know, any jingles.
We've done such a great job, Christian, in making a name, a title to the show that is so SEO friendly. You know, just put DLC into any search engine and you'll inevitably find us.
It's you want moment. Anthony Taramina? You got him. You know, he's part of the package.
No. I have been acquired.
We got him. Come on. He's
okay. He's got his own theme song. You can have me. All right. It's all right.
Yay. All right. Part of the package. So acquisition's a huge story. Anthony, do you have another, I think, top tier story of the year that you, you think defines 2022?
I think that Grand Theft Auto 6 leak was a pretty big deal. Just, I mean, for a number of reasons. One, it is arguably the biggest upcoming game of all time.
Yeah.
It jump-started a conversation about what is a in-development game. You know, what, I don't want to say unfinished, but you know, this conversation of, oh, I saw this footage, it doesn't look very good. And then all these developers coming out and saying, look, some of your favorite games don't look good until the last little bit. And I think that was really interesting to hear people both talk about it, but also share things. You know, there was a lot of threads on Twitter of, look, this was X game at this point. Look at it. It was just polygons. And, you know, 6 months later, it looked like this finished product.
Yeah.
But it was, yeah, it's a big deal for a number of reasons. You know, not also considering the fact that Rockstar got hacked. And that's a big deal. So I think that's a pretty significant story, but the ramifications of it outside of maybe putting some delays on Grand Theft Auto 6, I don't see anything beyond that, but it was a pretty big deal.
I agree. A huge story that the biggest, I mean, this reminds me of when Half-Life 2 got hacked. I don't know if there's listeners that don't even remember it for that far back, but you know, Half-Life 2 was this game that got announced. It was the biggest possible IP in gaming when Half-Life 2 got announced, and it was going to come out in like 6 months after the announcement, and nobody knew they were working on it. It was the craziest thing ever. And then somebody hacked and got the source code, and it caused this massive delay. It was a huge, huge thing. I think that's the only equivalent, because this, as you said, is a sequel in the biggest franchise on the planet. I'm actually, you know, and I don't think this detracts from the magnitude of the story, but I'm also kind of amazed at how little it seems to have actually meant as far as, you know, any real impact on the game or the industry. I mean, I thought you put it very well, Anthony, in that I think it was a cool learning moment for people in how games actually come to fruition, you know, like the long and bumpy road that is game development. I think it probably educated some folks, including, you know, us. But I don't think it actually It certainly didn't have the kind of immediate impact that the Half-Life 2 leak did, but of course that game was a lot closer to being released when it happened too. So maybe apples and oranges, but you know,
we know of yet, right? Like Rockstar was very adamant at the time of like, this isn't going to change things. Doesn't change our dev cycle. I mean, it certainly changed one individual's life when they got arrested in a big way. And I'm curious what, you know, repercussions were felt internally at Rockstar. Not curious as in I have any business to know, but you know, how did that happen? How did they get in? What security protocols changed? Rockstar was already a pretty tight ship in terms of, you know, with the Red Dead 2 announcements. It was like, I think the first announcement was just the color palette of the logo, you know, that they were, and it was like, oh, here's what it is. And then the silhouettes and the teases. And so I'm curious, you know, what stuff they've changed. And because they are that company, you know, I don't know if we'll ever fully know if GTA 6 did or did not see a massive delay because of the stuff they're doing internally because of that hack. And I imagine it sent, and I can say I not shockwaves, but I know that it also made ripples, at least at other developers. They all, not all, but at least some had a sit down and they're like, this can't happen to us. You know, don't click those links in those emails.
Yeah. Don't click those links. They may look so like, maybe that guy does want to give you his entire inheritance, but not in an email, not like this.
Yes, but also like we got one the other day that was like a text message and it was like, you know, we tried to deliver your package, you know.
Yeah.
Click on
all the time.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
And so I do think that there were bigger shockwaves caused by it, but I don't know if we'll ever see, you know, how big they were.
I don't even work on Grand Theft Auto 6 and I've gotten calls from Windows. Have you guys ever gotten a phone call? Hi, this is Windows calling. I'm like, Windows is calling me? Have you guys ever gotten that? I'm not even making it up. I've literally gotten a call from a person who's like, I'm calling from Windows and there's a problem. I'm like, you're calling from Windows? He's like, yes, I need your login information to fix the problem on Windows. And I was like, oh, well, I don't want any problems with Windows. I use that every day.
It has gotten worse.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no one's safe. No one's, I mean, literally, I was just reading yesterday about the, you know, the massive security breach of LastPass. Yes. I was like, if anyone should have top tier security, it's LastPass. And I'm like, I guess it really wasn't the last pass. You're gonna have to change that pass.
And they were like, they were like, hey, so we got hacked, but don't worry, nobody got anything. And they're like, okay, they may have gotten a little too deep. Okay, they may have gotten some passwords. Okay, you know, like
it's entirely possible that they got every damn thing that we have here. It's certainly possible, but
we were hacked. The first tweet that said they didn't get anything was actually them saying that. The fault in all of these systems, it's like the zombie movie, right? Like we are the Walking Dead. Like the fault is the people. it's idiots, not idiots, all of us being like, I do want a honey banked ham.
I think honey banked ham. To some extent, it's hubris. You know, you think, how many times this year did somebody end up on a stage that shouldn't have ended up on a stage, Wilson?
Yes, that too.
And it happened again, and you know, it happened again. And then at the very end of the year, in our own style event, a kid ended up on stage. You know, you don't put those policies in place until it happens to you. And then when it happens to you, it's too late.
Then you're dead as your girlfriend floats away on a door. Like hubris is the thing that literally kills all of us at one point.
I'm just now realizing that really shouldn't bet on that honey baked ham showing up.
Time to tell your in-laws there's not going to be a Christmas dinner after all.
I got bad news and worse news. The bad news is I got to change my password. The worst news is they're not getting a honey baked ham for Christmas. All right. Christian, do you have a story of the year that we haven't talked about yet?
I think mine, and I think this, no offense, I think it could have larger ramifications for the industry, maybe not in 2023, but perhaps further out. And it is the unionification, the forming of unions in the video game industry. We have talked about Game Workers Unite, and I think I probably have that wrong, but like other attempts at it. Jeff, you and I are both in a union, and we have talked about generally a pro-union approach. Yes, is the, you know, look at early days of the mafia. Was it built on the back of corrupt union people? You betcha. Is there a lot of horrible things throughout the history and everything? You betcha. But generally speaking, I am in favor of unions and what they provide to the average worker. And we're seeing that in video games now in a way that we hadn't before, with Raven Group forming, I believe they were the first union of a AAA studio, and now the ZeniMax Workers United forming and trying to take Microsoft up on their stance that they would not get involved. They talked about that with Raven, because as they were acquiring Activision, Microsoft said, hey, we are going to stay out of this, which usually companies say, like, we're going to stay out of it. And then they send 10 union busters to break some knees, you know, on the factory floor. But so the ZeniMax Workers,
we're going to stay out of this unless a union actually forms. And then we're definitely not staying out of this.
We're going to stay out of this. And by out of this, we mean killing you and your family. But this ZeniMax one is over 300 QA workers, which is also the Raven Group was started with QA.
It's interesting, right? That seems to be where it is actually happening, is in the QA departments first.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's because they're very bad working conditions often there, and lower pay oftentimes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And there's maybe not the artistic peer pressure. And I'm not trying to discount what QA does, but this idea of like, no, this is your passion. You're going to animate forever. You can't, you know, you don't want to unionize. You're this kind of stuff. But I'm super curious to see where this goes. I believe the largest group if it happens. And so far, it seems like Microsoft is staying out of it. I think this could be huge for the games industry going forward. I mean, it is a industry notorious for hire and fire as projects build up and scale down, and long work hours, and QA especially, contract workers with no benefits that are brought in and ground down to the bone and then fired and then have to hustle to find another thing. And I think this could change gaming and gaming culture, the people who make games, in a very positive way, is what I'm hopeful for. That's my Christmas wish, I guess.
Yeah. 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 I think it's a good sign. I'm certainly optimistic as well about it. We'll see how it shakes out and if it continues to spread. And if it will lead to, better stuff for workers, we'll see. But I think you're right. This is the year that has really begun, that spark. And we'll see if it carries forward. there's a few other stories that I think helped define 2022 in gaming. One of them is that, you know, at the end of last year, starting this year, it really felt like all the momentum, or at least a lot of energy, was being put into the notion of NFTs and gaming being a place where non-fungible tokens were going to be explored, let's say. There was going to be a lot of that in gaming. And that seemed to be the indication. I think we talked about it a lot at the end of last year about, you know, that the 2022 maybe the year where you just can't escape it, that NFTs were going to be everywhere. And I think it's very interesting how in 12 short months, it really feels like, obviously, the bottom fell out of the market, and a lot of external things that have nothing to do with video games per se affected the momentum of NFTs. But I do think it's fascinating that here we are starting 2023, or about to, and that's really just, for the most part, off the table. Right, Anthony?
Yeah, I would say outside of Dr. Disrespect's game, which, I mean, you know, may just have the support because Dr. Disrespect is Dr. Disrespect. I can't really think of an example of a game where they came out and said, look, we want to implement NFTs, and it wasn't met with backlash over support. Right. I think Dr. Disrespect, he has you know, just enough fans that they kind of just wash out any other criticism. And also, you know, who cares what he's doing? But at the end of the day, there were a lot of games that came forward and said, look, we want to try this. And a bunch of people just said, no, thank you. And then they took a second to think about it and tweaked it. And then eventually a lot of them backed down and said, oh, never mind. That's no longer part of our plans. So I think, you know, the voice of at least communities out there were able to say, hey, we don't really want NFTs or things in games that make it seem like you're less interested in delivering a quality piece of entertainment and you're trying to turn it into a marketplace or you're trying to turn it into a commodity. The main thing we want is a video game. And if you can get that video game right and then later maybe figure out an NFT solution, okay, we can talk. But for right now, I think so many companies were coming forward and saying, here's our game. It's not out yet. It's also going to be NFTs. And then they just were dead in the water.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that isn't to say we're not going to see that. I think that still there still will be the there was the Summer of Games game. I can't remember. It was like everything game. Which I think is going to be, you know, certainly seems to be still happening and certainly based around NFTs. So I don't think it's gone. And it certainly still may have a resurgence. We have no idea what the future of that world is going to look like, but I just think it's fascinating how NFTs as a technology really seemed inevitable to me, at least at the end of 2021, and here we are in 2022, and it really has almost gone 180 degrees from that, where it feels like the exception rather than the inevitability for those projects. We also saw, you know, PS Plus, you know, the unveiling of PS Plow, as we all know it should be called. Which
especially where you are right now, you need a PS Plow to get out of your house.
No, I mean, kidding.
I need the PS Plow Extreme.
I need any kind of plow. PS, I'll take a Xbox Plow at this point. As well as snow is what he's saying. I'm in the middle of a bomb cyclone. I don't know if you guys are aware of that. but I think from my perspective, that PS Plus revamp really pretty underwhelming and disappointing as far as a what I expected to be a major contender to the Game Pass throne, and it just doesn't seem to be that now. Maybe I'm wrong, Anthony. Maybe you'll correct me, but I feel like. There was a lot of Sturm und Drang and not a lot of there.
If you like that cat game, Stray, that was about it.
I did like Stray. I did like
Me too, but we probably got codes for it.
It's true. I also got a code for it. But yeah,
it's I'm a big PlayStation fan. I actually, spoiler for what won't happen later, but I actually wrote a list of just Sony's games this year. That could easily be my top five. Like these are just Sony games and they're all incredible. Like they had a banger of a year. I love their games. I love their console. I love their controller. Big fan. I do not love their Plus offerings. It just feels confusing and half-baked. I mean, this is the thing that I think we were talking about it last year was codenamed Spartacus. Like Spartacus is a bad dude. Spartacus.
Well, it kind of makes sense because doesn't a bunch of people stand up and go, I am Spartacus. And it just gets really confusing and you don't know which Spartacus you're supposed to
that one.
Pay a monthly fee to, you know, you're like, so it feels very appropriate, you know?
That's a scene from Spartacus. Maybe that was the full code name is this will be a scene from Spartacus, not Spartacus.
Which one of these Spartacuses am I supposed to use?
I subscribe to this lazy guy. It's old man. Oh no.
I'm Spartacus Plus. I'm Spartacus Premium.
Yeah.
It was
terrible. I mean, it really should have been a thing where every game that comes out that isn't a first party game, you go, oh man, I wonder if that will end up on PS Plus, blah, 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 or Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah.
Which one's going to get it? And right. Who's going to get it first? You know, a game that you're excited about that maybe just didn't like last year, Guardians of the Galaxy. We all really like Guardians of the Galaxy. Who was going to get it first? Game Pass got it.
Yeah.
PlayStation Plus didn't have an offering. And so I think if they had done that, if they had competed in a true sense of getting games that are worthwhile, that are interesting, that had enough conversation around them, then I think they would have been able to get away with these three tiers. But making these three tiers and offering, you know, streaming of older games and some, you know, a digital library of PS1 and PS2 classics, it just doesn't do anything for me personally.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I guess, you know, the last story I'll mention before we move on is that G4, the reimagining rebirth of the old video game network, shut down after, I think less than a year. So it was reborn in 2022 and perished in 2022 all at the same time. And, you know, a lot of our friends, were employed at the new G4, sad of course for them losing their jobs. I think it was fascinating and clearly representative of a different landscape of games media.
Yeah, I think it was a bad year in general. My heart's out to all those folks.
Yeah, a lot of lost jobs, yeah.
And some really talented people in that it appears that the game space has lost forever. And I think understandably so. And it's just a bummer because I think there is incredible work happening in the game space and there are some incredible reporters out there and people doing op-eds and making incredible videos and doing all that work. But in 2022, I think we lost a lot of really great folks in the space. And it just seems, I mean, we say it on this show sometimes jokingly, like, you know, like, oh, patrons, you make Wednesday's show possible. We're going to talk about farts. But I sincerely don't know how this show survives without it. And so many other
without
things
farts.
Like this without farts.
Yeah.
It's just a sad state of the enthusiast press and games media. And I think it ultimately will unfortunately be worse before it gets better.
I agree. And obviously we've seen that. But you're right. The silver lining is that there are enough people that care to get this kind of content that they will pay for it. And that is something that we are particularly grateful for, but I am grateful for just as a consumer of this kind of stuff. That you're seeing, you know, as you're seeing, you know, folks like our friends at Kind of Funny, you know, exploding and having this great new studio that they debut. And just there's enough of these podcasts, our friends at What's Good Games, you know, all these peer groups that we've got that are kind of striking out on their own and really doing some great stuff. So we are not at that scale, but I do feel like they are peers. And it's great that we're not in competition and we're all sort of, you know, boats that are all enjoying a rising tide, which is pretty great.
The other thing I'll add in terms of stories is handhelds, Steam Deck specifically, mm-hmm. but the Analog Pocket got into more people, the Playdate.
Yeah.
And also people's desire for a Switch too, I think really speaks to this idea of playing great games on the go that for a long time, handheld gaming, you know, was a failed experiment that Sony shouldn't have taken. And of course, Microsoft's not going to do one. And now also the Backbone and Razer Kishi and like this expansion of good controllers, good ways, GeForce Now, rest in peace, Stadia, not even a story.
Not going to bring it up.
Just the Stadia.
I just found it in the moment. Oh, I'm so sad.
A blip on the radar of 2022.
The G4 of cloud service games.
Indeed.
But I do think that 2022 showed that there is an appetite for that handheld style of gaming and AAA gaming. And as someone who's loved handheld gaming, it really excites me and I hope it carries forward.
Yeah.
And it seems like Valve has no intent of slowing down, which is awesome.
Yeah. The Steam launch as a story in and of itself is pretty remarkable as far as how bad it didn't go. You know, I mean, obviously it was hard. It was hard for a lot of people to get them, which is still the case. But it's still, you know, I think ultimately a pretty strong win for Valve on almost every level. All right, let's get to the meat of the show now and talk about DLC's favorite game of the year. But first, I need to tell you about our sponsor, HelloFresh. Oh my gosh, I love HelloFresh. I tell you, HelloFresh has saved me this holiday season. I have my in-laws in town at the house, and I've been able to cook them fresh meals, home-cooked meals. I get to cook by my own hand using fresh ingredients. It's been a delight. It's been a lifesaver. Because with HelloFresh, you get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. You skip trips to the grocery store, which, let me tell you, at this time of year, anytime I can not go to the grocery store is a win. I count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. And it also saves me money. It is the season for saving money wherever we can. Am I right? HelloFresh is cheaper than grocery shopping and 25% less expensive than takeout. So you can use those savings for holiday gifts or treat yourself. And with HelloFresh, you can eat better amid all the holiday temptations. Their meals have 20% fewer calories than takeout, so you can still have full flavor just without the guilt. And I love knowing exactly what I put in my dishes because I'm the one doing it. Are you short on time? Look for HelloFresh's quick and easy options like the 20-minute meals and the easy cleanup dishes. They are big on flavor and easy on effort. Time-saving solutions that mean more time with friends and family around the holidays. And there's so much variety with over 35 recipes available to choose from each week. There's something to please everyone. Family-friendly, fit and wholesome, even veggie meals. Plus, you can easily customize your meals by swapping proteins or sides, upgrading your proteins, or even adding protein to a veggie meal. HelloFresh has been a staple of my life for many years now. I can't live without it. I love it. And we here at DLC have made it easy for you to check it out yourself. Go to HelloFresh.com/DLC18 and use the code DLC18 for 18 free meals plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/DLC18 and the code DLC18 for 18 free meals plus free shipping. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. DLC's
Games of the Year. DLC's Games. Wait, Christian won't like that. DLC's personal favorite Games of the Year.
Based on an incomplete sampling. Based on an incomplete sampling, nevertheless, here we are talking about our favorite games of the year. We will start counting down our top fives with number five. Anthony Taormina, what is your number five favorite game of the year?
My number five favorite game of the year, ranked as number five, is Sifu.
Sifu, yes, yes, great choice.
I really, really like this game. I wasn't entirely sold on it when I previewed it maybe a month before it came out, and it didn't click with me. But then when I was able to play the kind of finished product and get my hands on it, it was the first game in a long time where I felt like I had to learn how to get better. It was like a fighting game almost. I had to learn how to read enemy attacks. I had to learn how to engage with the systems beyond the ones that I felt comfortable. You know, I couldn't just dodge. You know, I was like, you know, I'm used to playing most games and just being able to dodge my way through it. I had to learn how to parry. I had to learn how to do the, I forget what it's called, but you know, where you're kind of standing in place and just kind of shifting. It's not as much as like a roll, but just kind of a shimmy. But When I was able to learn that and get better and repeating the runs to the point where I could go to certain bosses that I just was getting destroyed early on and beat them without them even touching me, it just felt super satisfying. And I think the setup of this revenge story and these characters in this group, kind of a la Kill Bill, of this like list of you need to take out all these people, but they have sort of mystical elements and they have a theme to them. Each of the levels is really unique. The music is great. I really just ended up coming away from the game saying, there's no way this is not going to make my top five
if only because it was a game in a long time that I went into it playing a certain way and came out of it like feeling as, you know, not a professional, but better. You know, most games you just play it and you're like, yeah, I get it. But this game, by the time I was done, I felt like I was better at playing the game just because I engaged with the systems.
Yeah. Yeah. And a completely indie game. This is Slow Clap as the developer, and I believe the publisher as well. And I just think an incredibly strong year for indie games. And I think Sifu is one of those ones that got a lot of attention and showed that these smaller games can feel AAA, can feel big. It can feel, I mean, it's not AAA, but it can feel like a major, major release. And I think that shows us it's number five on your list. That's a great, great choice. Sifu, number five. Christian Spicer, what is your number five game of the year?
Well, I want to give a shout out over the
voting
on our Discord.
Okay. I thought you were going to say six. I thought you were going to
do a six. No, because you mentioned having a great year of indies, and over on DLC's Discord right now, it's the fan voting. I've gone in there a couple of times.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to see some of these small indie games up against, you know, these big AAA games and what folks in the community are playing. And I think I say this every year to my number five, that this is the hardest one. For me, number five is always the hardest.
Because you put six games at number five.
Yeah. I was like, how many, you know, I got the whole curve. The curve of the five, you can just pack games into.
He wrote down the list of PlayStation games, found out there were six, and was like, okay, which one of these am I going to cut off?
It's only called a PlayStation 5, but there are so many good
games.
Which
one of these five was going to hire me as a podcast host?
Yeah, I would, if I could do that, I would stack my list very much that way, 100%. That's how you do it. I mean, Jeff was my number five favorite game of the year 9 years ago. So I don't know if you knew that. It really is the hardest one for me, number five. And I debated a whole bunch of games, and there are too many good games left off the list. And so this is the perfect example of a favorite game and not a best game. And my number five game for 2022 is Bayonetta 3. And I have loved this franchise since it came out almost, you know, 20 years ago, it feels like, first on the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, and then how it became a Nintendo franchise, right? Like Nintendo and Sega coming together. And Bayonetta 3 is such a time capsule of a game of that franchise where it doesn't look better than it looked, you know, 15 years ago, whatever it is. And I don't think it's the best Bayonetta. I think that might be Bayonetta 2 is probably the best Bayonetta. Bayonetta 3 tries some things, and some work really well. I mean, it really leans into like the big bombastic boss fight, but it's also struggling on Switch hardware. But there's so many of these moments of like monsters tearing through cities as you're, you know, Kratos God of Warring, like through a little thing to a thing, and then you become a big monster and battle it and all this stuff. But then there's also like, vague gameplay spoilers, like 2D side-scrolling stealth missions and open world hubs that are open. It's open, not an open world. It's just open. This like this big empty space because it's on Switch and it can't do it. But I love that combat when it fires on all cylinders. I understand why some people were kind of upset by the end, or it left them wanting, I guess. But I think there's a promise for an awesome future there. So I'm going to hold my final thoughts on what the narrative end to Bayonetta 3 is to see what threads they pick up in a hopeful Bayonetta 4. But I love the franchise. I love that we got another one. I love that it came out this year. And so Bayonetta 3 is my fifth favorite game of 2022.
Wow. I did not see that one coming, but I think that's a pretty cool pick. I know you were.
Here are 10 other games I want to mention.
No! All right. My fifth favorite game of 2022 is Cult of the Lamb. Another example of a great indie game. This one took me by surprise. I did not think I would like it. I didn't think, I want to play as a the leader of a cult. I'm not a huge fan of Animal Crossing. I wasn't like, hey, you know what Animal Crossing needs? more sacrifices, sacrifices at an altar. But man, this is a really addictive game, so well executed. I think one of the big trends for 2022, especially in the indie space, was mashing up two very disparate genres and finding some really new feeling inside of a game that does two different things and puts them together. And I think Cult of the Lamb is a perfect example of that, because it really is two very different kinds of games. I think a really excellent action combat, sort of Zelda-like exploration and collecting resources game, with this very much Animal Crossing style, village management, town management sim. And I never thought that those would mix as well as they do here. It's got so much style. It's got a lot of comedy, and it constantly surprised me with the different things that I was able to do and the ramifications of that, and just how much fun I was having managing my world and wanting to do all the different parts of Cult of the Lamb. A really great game that I thoroughly enjoyed in 2022.
On Game Pass, and also great on Steam Deck.
I think, yes, I played it most on Steam Deck. It is an excellent Steam Deck game. It looks great. It has so much visual style, and it looks great on Steam Deck as well. So
my game, you know, when we always say, like, it was the game I was struggling to put on. It was the game.
Oh, you're going to mention a sixth game, Anthony? Oh, yeah. Okay. No, go ahead. Yeah.
It's my number six. Okay.
Uh-huh. There it is. Jeez Louise. He's Anthony Taormina.
I also want to point people, you know, we had to, because of holiday schedules, we had to record this episode a little bit early. So the Discord poll and discussion in our awesome Discord community is still ongoing to determine the fan top five of the year. I'm hoping we'll be able to mention that next episode when we do our predictions episode, but you should get in on that. I think there's still some voting available for the final fan voted top five favorite games of the year. And of course our Discord is 5x5 DLC on Discord. So get over there and get your votes in. It's been so much fun watching the community debate and vote on their games. As Christian mentioned, there's already some cool surprises in there. I wanted that to be part of this episode, but we're just recording a little early for it. All right. We have moved to number four. Number four. Anthony Taormina, your fourth favorite game of 2022.
It's God of War Ragnarok.
Good game.
God of War Ragnarok. Excellent game. The sequel, the PlayStation exclusive. Tell me why you put it at number four.
I mean, okay. I struggled. This one I struggled with the placement of, because I love this game. I think this game is great. I also really enjoyed the 2018 one. I think comparing the two, the 2018 one blows this one out of the water, just because it's more of a surprise. You know,
it's not frozen. There's water on a boat. I get it.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, there is also water on a boat. In this
A lot of water.
Quite a bit of water on the boat.
I guess
that's part of my criticism. Is a lot of similarities. Things where, you know, it felt okay. I've done this before, but this is still an exceptional game, and I have to reward that. And I think the story is really well done, and it's very mature and sophisticated for a video game. It definitely deals in stuff that is unique in terms of fathers and sons. You know, you don't get a lot of video games kind of touching on things that resonate on not a personal level for me, but just like a human level, right, while also dealing with the situation of gods battling each other. It mixes a lot of things together, and that's really, really what I like about the game. And at the same time, the combat is super fun. I don't want to make it seem like I don't enjoy it. It is very familiar. You know, you jump into it and you're like, okay, yeah, I remember. And I love this, but also same. It's overall beautiful game. Visuals are incredible. I think they took a lot of the kind of criticisms of having to maybe dial it back a little bit in the first game, maybe in terms of boss types or enemy types, or, you know, we can only do so much with what we've got. And the second game adds more diversity in terms of a lot of different things, not just your combat maneuvers and your enemy types, but where you're going, what you're doing. And I really, really do appreciate that and want to recognize it. And I imagine we'll probably talk about it some more.
Very possible. Very possible. Certainly one of the biggest games of the year, you know, a game that we all, I think, expected to get delayed and did not. I think that's a pretty good
yeah.
thing to note about it as well. But that didn't mean it came out buggy or had any dip in quality from the 2018 God of War, of course, was DLC's game of the year. We our consensus vote of the one game we made the show's game of the year that year. And I think, you know, that's pretty big shoes to fill. And I think it filled them very, very well. It took that formula, which, again, as you said, Anthony, it didn't reinvent the wheel. It didn't reinvent that formula in the way that game had reinvented God of War's formula. But it certainly added a whole bunch of new flavor and let you do things in that world that you hadn't done before. And I think it told a really compelling story with some incredible acting and maintained that, you know, single camera perspective.
Yes,
it's an amazing game. Yeah. All right. God of War Ragnarok is Anthony's number four. Number four, Christian Spicer.
TMNT Shredder's Revenge. As I went into the year, I probably would have thought that the Cowabunga Collection would have made this spot. I will spoil and say Cowabunga Collection is not on my list. That would be a great if my list was just
all TMNT.
I broke them out like Turtles in Time. Turtles in Time Arcade, Turtles in Time SNES.
I would not put it past you, Christian.
Yeah, I mean...
Hyperstone Heist is lower because it does reuse a bunch of assets, but and some new boss battles.
I'm surprised you didn't put Cowabunga Collection on your list just as a way to get 13 games on your list.
I'll edit that in. I'll take that bet. Cowabunga Collection is excellent. It just received a big update here recently as well when you are listening to this. And it delivers those games as I remember them in a great package. Shredder's Revenge is the perfect forward reimagining of what a brawler is. Much in the way Streets of Rage 4 brought that franchise forward while still feeling familiar. You know, Shredder's Revenge is not a single cam third person action game with a one edit about Donatello's son. And, you know, it doesn't force you to be buddies with Shredder until the end. And then you have some big reckoning. Like, it's not doing any of those things. It is a 2D sprite based brawler. But the tweaks that they added to the formula in terms of combos, the way you could level up your characters, having 6-player online co-op work, having couch co-op work. I just bought the game in the Steam Winter Sale, so I own it on PC as well now to playing it on Game Pass. It's such a fantastic game, and a game that I probably texted you the most about, Jeff, because I think I would text you every time my kids were playing it co-op with their friends. I'd be like, here they go.
With pictures. Yeah, yeah.
With pictures. And it always warmed my heart. Like, they'd have friends over and that's what they'd want to sit down and play. And even kids who weren't super into video games, you know, could grok it. And I played through it with my wife. I played through it with my kids. I played through it on my little brother's arcade cabinet. I've played through it now on my Steam Deck. It does so very well. And it also just got a great update that adds CRT filter, a VCR style filter where like the wave line goes through it. Also virtual dipstick, so you can like make it harder as you would in an arcade where, you know, people would be like, aha, enemies are more difficult now, kids. Bye-bye quarters. It's such a fantastic evolution of the brawler while maintaining what makes that genre so pure. If you haven't played it, I highly recommend Turtles Shredder's Revenge. It's great.
I gotta tell you, Christian, you'll be delighted to know that I have a renewed appreciation for that game just in the last few days, because as holiday vacation has begun for my kids, I finally sat my 6-year-old down and said, hey, do you want to play this game with me? And we have been playing it every day in my office on the PlayStation 5. And my daughter has been sitting in my lap and like going, turtles, turtles. And it's been so much fun. He has, my son Jack has been absolutely loving the game. And my daughter Zoe has just been cheerleading and having a great time as well. I give her the controller and she runs around like a maniac, tells me which character to pick. It's great. It's great fun. And I think well deserving of your list. So that is Christian's number four. My number four is Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope, which I love the first Mario plus Rabbids. I expected to love the sequel to Mario plus Rabbids. And I do
sparks of hope to like it.
I had sparks of hope. What I did not expect was how much it changes the formula of the first game, and still it's still wonderful. It finds what I mean to say is it finds new ways to be wonderful. I if it had just been new quests, new enemies, but the same exact gameplay, I think I would have still loved Sparks of Hope. But it is very much not that. It really does add a completely new way of playing. The individual battles are very, very different, and the mechanics of those battles have been very much changed. And the way you interact with the overworld, all the exploration and puzzle solving in the game, it feels fresh and different, and very much a reinvention of that first game. And it's been a delight. It's another game that my son and I have enjoyed not even together, but sort of in parallel.
Because you beat first.
Yes. And he constantly is telling me, like, Daddy, do you want me to help you get past that? I'm like, no, I can do it. It's been really fun. And I love seeing the game through his eyes, but I have thoroughly enjoyed playing it myself. And I think I think the first game was underappreciated and kind of didn't get its just due. And I think this one is kind of suffering the same fate, where I don't think enough people are talking about it. And that's why one of the reasons I put it on my list is like, this franchise is awesome and this game is excellent. That's Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope by number four.
I'm super curious what other games are on your list, because there's other games that could be like that. Yeah, okay.
Other games that could be like that, yeah.
This is getting dicey.
It is. All right, we are up to number three. Top three now. Anthony Taormina.
But not for Christian. Christian, not top three. It's just three random.
That's right.
We're supposed to put these in order? Oh, no. Okay. I've been way off.
My number three is Immortality.
Oh, wow. Great pick.
I talked about it a little bit.
You are immortal.
Yeah, like you mean my number three, number two is invisibility, and number one is X-ray vision. Oh,
I think you started looking at the wrong list.
I talked about it. So I was on the podcast around the time I started playing it, but I love this game for so many different reasons. On the one, kind of spectrum, I liked it because I got to play it with my wife. It was a game that we could play together. I could have the controller, but she understood everything we were trying to do. For those that might not be familiar, essentially what you're doing is you're combing through individual shots or scenes or behind the scenes clips from three separate movie productions. And you're trying to figure out what happened to this actress, and any of the things you can see, within the frame. So as you fast forward, new things enter the frame, you can click on and it will maybe take you to a clip that features either that same thing, so like the same actor, or you can click on flowers and it'll take you to another scene that features flowers, but not necessarily in the same movie. So you can kind of jump around between those three movies. And so you're kind of piecing things together based on after they say cut and the characters interact, or the behind the scenes. It's not worth like giving too much information, because you do kind of get this. It sounds kind of absurd, but you start to like solve this mystery in your head. And then it gets nuts. And then some stuff happens that I'm not going to talk about. And then it just like everything that you think you know about the game just gets thrown out the window. But
Michael
I also
Keaton
really
shows up with a fire poke and is like, "You want to get?" Yeah, you know,
exactly. But then I just, you know, as a guy who went to film school and used to hold the clapper and hold the, you know, the boom mic, it just was nice to just, you know, the, you know, scene two, Apple, take two, you know, that was, I love that. And I, Sam Barlow, who also made Her Story, and the other game escapes my mind right now. I've liked each of those games. But Immortality is by far my favorite, and I just, yeah, it has so many layers. You could just want to click on these things to put together these clips for these three movies to just find out the plot of the movie. You could just find out the plots of these three movies, and that's satisfying. But also,
which there are three movies, which I also think is like you can just movies that are. Yeah, decent movie.
Wild.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that in and of itself is the first one is a crazy movie. The second two, the other two are maybe not as strong, but the first one is bonkers. But then, yeah, you also have that other layer of what happened to her. But then there's the other layer that I'm talking about. That's just, it's nuts. Anybody that's played the game that, you know, has discovered kind of the other layer is knows what I'm talking about. And it's nuts. And I really, really like this game.
That's a great pick. And it is, you know, such an unusual kind of game. He's doing stuff that nobody else is doing. You know, we always make fun of full motion video. By the way, the other one was Telling Lies.
Telling Lies. Thank you.
Her Story, Telling Lies and Immortality. He's carving out his own little subgenre, Sam Barlow. And it's amazing that he manages to mine new ways of doing it, you know, cause Immortality doesn't work like Her Story. Yeah, you know, it's different, but it's similar, but very cool. Very cool. That's a great pick. Go ahead.
I think worth noting here as well, and I mean this with all seriousness, as we talk about what 2022 is and was and what the future holds for games, this is Netflix's first DLC favorite game of the year nom. This is available on mobile devices via Netflix's subscription, which is just Netflix. And they're pushing to mobile games in the gaming space. And what's that tactical mech game? Oh my God.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I loved it.
Into the Breach.
Into the Breach. Such a great game.
It's also on Netflix. Yeah. And they've had a couple of, you know, older but big games. But Immortality came out pretty quickly after its
I mean, a perfect game release. For this, right? Because it is about movies and movie watching. And it just fits. Yeah. All right, that's Anthony Taormino's number three. Christian Spicer, what is your number three game of the year?
If you have listened to this show this year, I don't think that this game being in my top five will be a surprise to anyone. But it is Ollie Ollie World, which is not only a phenomenal game on Steam Deck, but it is just a phenomenal game. And it is a game that in its release year also released two incredible DLCs. So since it released two of our shows.
that was nice of them.
I had to throw it in here. But two really good DLCs that I think I described them on the show when I played each of them. It doesn't make the main game feel lesser, which oftentimes I think a DLC that brings in a new mechanic can, and you'll be like, oh, this is the complete game. Now I can manual or whatever, you know, it was lacking before. But each of the DLCs, each of the expansions brought something new and fresh to the world. And the level designs are just so created. Ollie Ollie World is a 2D precision platformer that just happens to take place on a skateboard. And I think the changes they made from Ollie Ollie and Ollie Ollie 2 in terms of making the levels at the same time more approachable, but also more difficult, is a testament to the incredible level design that team put together in the game, where you can just complete a level and move on in a way that's really fun and satisfying. But you can also try to do all the challenges or find the hardcore route, the gnarly route, and the challenges that brings. And the amount of times I was able to find myself in a flow state or in the Tetris effect as I was playing, I guess that's seeing the game. I see that too, actually. And then in the real world, you see a rail or stairs. But the level design in Ollie Ollie World is exquisite. And the ability to find that Zen flow state while playing is something that a lot of games didn't offer for me this year. And I think it, like Spark of Hope for you, Jeff, is a game that All the Other World came out and got good reviews, but I don't think enough people are talking about it at the end of the year. And it is 100% a game that I think should be on everyone's favorites of the year list. And it's so well made and a great evolution of that franchise and one of the best, you know, platformers, 2D platformers of, I think, this decade. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Ollie World. Very good pick. That's Christian Spicer's number three. My number three pick is a game that I'm 100% certain isn't going to be on either of your lists, but I adore it. I love it. I don't understand the haters. It's Horizon Forbidden West. I love the first game, Horizon Zero Dawn, obviously. And I think this one, yes, I mean, a lot of the criticism is it just does what the first game does more. But yeah, I love being in that world. I think it does so many things well. And really, honestly, I don't think there's anything in gaming that I enjoy more than taking down a giant robot dinosaur with my bow and arrow and all my toolkit. Like that hunting, that improvisational, using all of the skills at my disposal, picking apart, finding the piece that I want to pluck off of it because I need that to upgrade my thing, to buy a piece at a vendor somewhere. It's just awesome. And the world, the size and scope of the world, the number of incredible side quests and cool storytelling moments. I just like being in this world. I think it has some of the best costume design ever in a video game. Every NPC is interesting and has its own story and look and feel, and the voice acting is great. I love Horizon. I'm so excited to see news that Horizon as a franchise is getting expanded with more side games and different kinds of genres. I love the world of Horizon, the mix between sort of a very primitive world and a very futuristic world at the same time. I thought Forbidden West was a home run, and I absolutely adored it. It's my number three.
As I thought about these lists and thought about where that game would land on yours, and I'm curious to get your take on them, I started to draw a lot of parallels between that universe and Avatar. In terms of the world that it creates, the hopefulness of it. Like, Aloy is not a pessimistic character.
Right.
She is faced with insurmountable odds time and time again, and she is a beacon of hope. I have not seen Way of the Water, but listening to you describe it in the first film, it seems very similar in terms of these worlds that they present, where it could be easy for these characters to go, well, life sucks.
They're not
taking mine and going home.
Right.
And that's not what it is. So I think it makes a lot of sense that the Horizon franchise would let you spend $500 on another VR headset.
Yeah, basically. Not wrong. Bring on 2023, baby. Anyway, that is my number three. All right. We are hit number two. Nitty gritty. Here we go. Anthony Taormina, your number two favorite game of 2022.
Vampire Survivors.
Woo! Good pick.
Vampire Survivors is going to be a game that maybe it wasn't the first to do this, and it's definitely not going to be the last, but we are going to be talking about in 2023, how many games are Vampire Survivors.
Created a subgenre for sure. Yeah.
The game, I'm a sucker for vampires.
Hate survivors though.
so anything, you know, Castlevania or you know, anything within that world in media, I'm in. So Vampire Survivors, my first kind of like encounter with it was I was just watching a Twitch streamer play it probably very, very early this year. And I was like, what is this game? What is he doing? And I didn't understand it. I didn't really get it. I thought there was more to it, you know, because you can't see what the person's doing. So then I downloaded it. It was like, you don't do anything. You don't tell them where to shoot. You just move around and you just pick up these upgrades. But then it becomes this like crazy okay, well, this run I got the Bible. Okay, let's make it a Bible run, and this run is let's try and see if garlic works. But it's a game that plays itself in a lot of ways, but it's super, super fun. It also has its own style that towards the end, when you're getting towards the 30-minute mark, is impossible to tell what's going on the screen. But it, I just had so much
way.
Yeah. Oh, it, yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it's moving at like pixels a second. But it's so creative in the way that they were able to find things that synergize well and just create this experience that, although it may seem simple on the surface, can be complex depending on how you want to tackle it and if you want to repeat it. But it's also like a great game to just have going and watch a TV show. And there was no game besides my number one that I played more this year than Vampire Survivors. And that's probably because I would just say, oh, I'm gonna fire up a run and watch a, you know, a episode of X TV show. And each time I would do something different. I pick a different character, pick a different level, and they're still adding to it. It really didn't officially come out until later this year.
All for the price of what? $4.
Yeah, it's less than $5. It's on Game Pass now, so you can, I think, get it on both Xbox or PC. It's the type of game that I think so many people will look at and turn up their nose, and then you say, just try it. Just try it. And then they try it, and they're like, okay, I get it.
Okay, this is my life now. This is what I do. I play this game. That's all I do.
Yeah, I think more than anything, the reason that I need to include it, or I needed to include it on the list for me personally, is the influence that I think it's going to have on so many games for next year and maybe even longer. In the same way, you know, I think roguelikes kind of took over and started with one game and now they're just everywhere. I think the inactive game where I've already seen a couple where, you know, some just add this ability to, okay, now you can aim. We'll let you aim or we'll let you do this. But Vampire Survivors started it and is by far the most addicting game that you would look at and go, there's no way I would get addicted to that.
Yes. You know, I loved this game. It is, it's an amazing thing. And it one person made it. Yeah. Incredible. You can play with one hand.
Yep.
Incredible. And yet here we are. Your number two game of the year, Vampire Survivors. Christian Spicer, what is your number two game of the year?
Well, I think we'll be talking about it again later. This is the only game on my list that I did not beat. And I think it is a very rare occurrence that I have a game on my favorites of the year that I did not beat, whatever that entails. I might have said like Fortnite one year and it's like, you don't beat that. But typically, if a game is going to be on my top five, I saw credits because I rarely danish a game that's on my top five. But that's exactly what I did in this. And I loved it. And I loved every minute of it. I bought it multiple times and I have no regrets buying it multiple times. And it's Elden Ring. I think what Elden Ring brought to the table of the open world game is something that felt fresh and connected with me in a way that I think Breath of the Wild did for a lot of other people in terms of bringing something new and different to an open world formula that has been arguably perfected by Horizon Zero Dawn or Far Cry 5 or, you know, an Assassin's Creed pre-Valhalla, whatever, Odyssey or Origins. And Elden Ring took, I think, a lot of what I think is great about open worlds and, oh, there's a thing over there and I want to go there and I bet it's meaningful. And Jeff, you talk about it in Bethesda games of like having important things and story moments happen around every corner. And Elden Ring delivered that for me, but also cut out a lot of the stuff that often bothers me in open world games. The, your son is dying, but why don't you go pick some lilac for an hour or greet any random NPC and nothing is meaningful, but they're there because towns need to have hundreds of people walking around in them. And Elden Ring is like, there's five people on the map, you know, that are NPCs. One of them you think is an NPC and then it kills you. And you're, you know, like, and I think what it does to the Souls formula as well, and I'll stop talking some so that Anthony can talk about it later, spoilers. I'm guessing. Maybe not. I'll keep talking.
My number seven game.
Number seven.
In terms of how it opens up the Souls formula, where I talked a lot about Sekiro, whenever year that was, of like loving that game, but I got to a point where it's, and it was my most played Xbox game, whatever year it came out. And I think folks were surprised by that because I quit talking about it on the show, mostly because I kind of got to a point where I was hammer, head, wall, nail, all of those things, immovable object, rock hard place. And Elden Ring, while I did not finish, I never felt that I got to that point. You could go grind mobs or pick harder enemies in areas you've already been. And then the new environments that I did get to after the major bosses I did take down, it's like you think that you knew what that game was. And then all of a sudden it's this vastly different environment or environment that's much more similar to a prior Souls game. And you see how the formula layers on top of that. I mean, it is, there's a reason why it sold what it did. There's a reason why it resonated with so many people, I think. And it came out early in the year. And while I don't think I'll ever roll credits in the game because it's just too big for me, it's like going to the Big Texan and ordering the eat the steak, you know, the 72-ounce steak, or no, you get it for free. I never will get that steak for free. But I loved every hour of Elden Ring that I played, and it may very well be my most played game of the year in terms of hours, especially considering the amount I played on PlayStation and then the amount I played again on Steam Deck. It's a phenomenal game, and I would say I think more people should play it, but I think everybody's played.
Yeah. I think it's the game that defines the year. I think if people look back on 2022, that's going to be the game that represents this year in gaming. And it certainly sales wise crushed everything, and certainly an impact and cultural relevance and all the metrics you want to measure. You mentioned Danish and Danishing a game. I am ashamed to say Danish has offered numerous times to try to schedule time to sort of shepherd me through, Sherpa me into the game and show me the love, try to instill the love of this game on me. This is just one that it's on me because I just haven't been able to schedule it and life is too crazy, but I want to, I want to find the love in this game. And I don't enjoy being in that world. Aesthetically, it doesn't grab me. I have a hard time being curious about what's around the next corner. But I should just shut up
things that will kill you. But
I think it's
fun storytelling beats.
You're talking about, you know, why I love things like Horizon Forbidden West, and it's just not that, you know. But that's just a personality quirk for me. So I'll shut up and let. I'm sure we'll talk about it in a second when Anthony speaks next.
I will say to
spoiling everything.
Play up to my part. Vampire Survivor was my sixth. That sure, and Bayonetta sure, sure. was like. I have the note. They were right. tearing at each other.
My number two is God of War Ragnarok, which for everything we talked about when Anthony brought it up at number four on his list, there are moments in that game that will stay with me forever. There's a barroom brawl that like I think about all the time, just how it was executed. There are incredible things that happen in that game. There's the way that a certain character uses color. This game has like throwaway moments that are better than entire games. And it just excels on every level as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it is some of the most satisfying, fun combat that I can imagine. I love the challenge of it. I love the way the game allows you to challenge yourself with the combat. I love the number of options I always have at my disposal. And the game keeps giving me more and more options as I go on of just ways to be creative in the combat and do something. And, oh man, did I get bored using that weapon? Oh, I've got another one that I can, you know, I'll switch them up mid combo or do all kinds of wild, crazy things. And other playable characters in this one. It just is so fun, visually stunning and gorgeous. A world that is interesting to me. NPCs that are fleshed out and fascinating and well acted. A delivery, the single camera thing is so compelling and so interesting, the way the camera moves through the world. There's just nothing I don't like about God of War Ragnarok. It is exceptional on every level. It's top tier craftsmanship of a video game. And it delivers a thunderous, powerful, fun experience. It's like, it's a pinnacle of game design and a worthy successor to one of the greatest games ever, God of War 2018.
Can I jump Anthony in line and do my favorite game of the year real quick while we're here?
Well, I was going to, before we get to relevant. Number one, before we get to number okay. one, I was
sorry, listeners.
Just going to say, hey, if you like our content, consider being a patron at patreon.com/DLCpod. The future is uncertain. Our future is uncertain. You've probably heard fewer and fewer ads through the year. Advertising on podcasts is in disarray. I know I have many podcasts, and all of our advertising is getting harder to come by. We really only survive because of patrons. We're hoping to get to 1,000 patrons in the next couple of months. We're only a couple of hundred away. And if you listen to the show and you'd like to support it, we have tiers of content. I talk about it at the beginning of rewards, but even if you can't afford that much a month, any amount is helpful and useful and appreciated. Of course, if it causes you any kind of financial hardship, we would not want you to support the show. But if you are able, we certainly would appreciate it. All right. That's our little advertisement. But Christian Spicer, you wanted to jump in line again, breaking the well-established rules.
Well, we were here until. Yeah. I mean,
I also could have jumped you, Jeff.
Yeah, because Anthony showed restraint as we kept spoiling his number
talk
one.
Talk about TMNT Shredder's Revenge.
Because we were still on twos then. We've now hit the end of two.
Okay. We're just giving you some guff.
All right, Christian, your number one is
Last of Us Part
One. Gotham Knights.
Thank you. Last of Us Part One, the PS5 version. What they brought to the combat. It's God of War, and what I want to add to what you both have said that I could not disagree with more is what I found so refreshing about it was, and I know it got knocked for like helpful NPCs chatting too much, but I loved the puzzles in God of War Ragnarok, not because they were The Witness, not because they were even difficult puzzles per se. And I think the beauty of them is that they happened in the level. I talked about the level design of Ali Ali World. And God of War Ragnarok just added minor, or sometimes larger than that, puzzle elements into the broader playscape. That I felt wasn't present in 2018. So you'd be in an awesome combat encounter, but then also need to do things within the environment to open up the next combat room or to get to a place. And it happened so seamlessly most of the time for me in my playthrough that I found it really refreshing. And I loved how they tweaked the formula from 2018 to this one of creating a game that could be very open at times and give you numerous tasks and checklists and things to do, but also a game that could feel very focused, very Uncharted in terms of or Tomb Raider. You have the singular path, and it didn't feel like you were missing out on side content when you were following that singular path. And when you went and did the side content, that side content felt meaty and worthwhile and interesting. And, you know, during our spoiler chat, Jeff, you and I both learned that we missed something kind of large.
Yeah.
The side content story beat that we just didn't experience, and we played a lot of that game, and it didn't feel like when you're doing that side content then that the main mission is being left unattended to. I think they balanced all of that stuff really well. And then my point to the combat would be the way that they can have one of the most satisfying weapons in all of games, but then also have moments where you don't use that and have that not feel crappy.
Right.
Is incredible. I can't imagine something like, hey, we have the, check out this axe. It's incredible. Everybody loves it. Great. Now we're going to make them use this wet fish for an hour. And I didn't miss the axe.
Hell of a
fish. I think it's a hell of a fish. it's just such a testament to games. And I think also to what Sony is able to make on their hardware. There are other games that have come out that just pale in comparison to a game that runs great on a base PS4.
Yeah, that's amazing.
They are how wizards is that
possible? Yeah,
over there. And for all the reasons you said in those is why God of War Ragnarok is my favorite game of 2022.
Favorite game, number one favorite game, objectively best game, according to Christian Spicer. God of War Ragnarok.
It might be accurate for God of War Ragnarok. I might, you know, die on that hill to say that it is the best, but.
Anthony Taormina, we all wait with bated breath. What is your number one most favorite game of 2022?
Well, outside of last year, when you and I both picked It Takes Two, usually when I pick the number one, I say, it's why I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah, and I suspected that would be the case. Christian kind of surprised me, honestly.
He and I had a conversation in June where he talked about, and I was like, oh, man, he's going to do it to me. but yeah, I mean, it's
what my wife says also, by the way.
Oh, man, he's going to do it to me.
But yeah, Elden Ring is my game of the year. No question. Look, when they first announced the game and started talking about it and saying, open world game and certain things like that, I got concerned. Maybe other fans did too, because a lot of the things that I love about the Souls games is the kind of curated, handcrafted elements. And open world games tend to put a lot of fluff and put a lot of like just filling out, padding the hours. And I was worried, okay, well, how are bosses going to work? Because, you know, making these curated places, you usually go and you find a boss. If this open world, how am I going to do this? Well, this game has so many curated areas on top of the open world. The open world is amazing. And there are so many bosses in this game. So many great bosses. So many bosses that will just beat you to a pulp. And be wearing almost no clothes while doing it.
Which is also what Christian's wife says.
Hey. I mean, you keep those jokes up, Jeff. You keep those.
No matter what, I think there are a few games on the level of a From Software game that just elicits a certain type of feeling from me in terms of the gameplay. Other games try and replicate it with the different, you know, builds and dodging or parrying or whatever, or, you know, just ducking right under a big giant boss's sword, and they just can't get it perfect. But From Software always seems to nail it. I adore almost every game that they've made, and this game is, I think, probably my favorite that they've ever made, because it's just, it compiles all those elements. It's bigger, it's better, it's more refined, but also has so much creativity on display. The lore is kind of, you know, absurd how deep it goes, and so many of like the items I love to read in other Souls games, but this, it just, I want to buy all the books they put out and kind of just dig into this world. There's really nothing about Elden Ring that from a Souls fan I did not absolutely enjoy from beginning to end. I played it multiple times with different builds, and yeah, it was just, and then Steam Deck came out and I was like, oh my God, I can play it on Steam Deck. And yeah, it's just such a treat. And I hope that though I would love for them to, From Software, that is, you know, make more games. And kind of learn from this lesson. I feel like we're stuck in Elden Ring. I feel like Elden Ring 2 is now
Core,
in
Armored Core 6.
Yeah, right? But yeah, I feel like Elden Ring 2
game.
Is now
your next favorite game is Armored Core 6.
Well, that's, I hope not. But I hope it, but yeah, I feel like now we're stuck. I feel like Elden Ring 2 is next because of how well it did and all that, but if they make another one of these, I will still be very happy because it was an incredible experience that you know, hour one, hour 10, hour 30, hour 40, hour 80, something crazy happened each one of those.
I hope they make part two and they call it Tears of the Kingdom. So it's just spelled the same as Zelda.
That's kind of like when, you know, Red Dead came out. As somebody who works in the website world when we are like, we're calling it Red Dead Redemption 2. Everyone's like, you're not going to call it Red Dead Redemption 2. It's like, do you know how well Red Dead Redemption did? I feel like we're just, yeah, Elden Ring 2 is inevitable.
Yeah.
You can't not have it happen.
Yeah.
Armored Core 6 will be called Elden Ring 2 by SEO tags.
100%.
You know, every time we talk about this game, I feel inadequate. I feel like I'm missing out on something, and I feel like there's something wrong with me because I don't enjoy.
Also, what your wife said.
But usually, you're just like, okay, Anthony, put it on my list. But it's because Christian also.
I know.
And that's the real knife.
Can I tell you something truthfully, Anthony? There's part of me that thinks he doesn't even really like it. He just did it to spite me. He just did it to make me feel bad. You know,
I mean, like that's I why said, I keep doing this show. Jeff.
In June, he said, I think it is going to make my list.
Yeah.
And then he also said, Jeff's going to put Horizon on there. I don't like Horizon. What do you think about Horizon? And I was like, I don't really like Horizon either.
I know. Now I'm the odd man out.
We cut our palms. We bled and we shook on it.
For the ring. For the Elden Ring.
All right. So number ones, we've heard. God of War Ragnarok from Christian Spicer, who jumped the line and just spoke out of turn. Elden Ring from Anthony Taormina. My number one, I wonder if you guys can guess it. I don't want you to guess it, but I wonder if you can. The thing that's amazing to me, I never thought in the year of our Lord, 2022, I would put a mobile game as number one. But my number one is... Vampire Survivors.
Oh.
Vampire Survivors.
Dang, you're playing it cool. I was singing about
it. You Dave Chend us. You just Dave Chend us.
I swerved. Yeah. Vampire Survivors. Now, when I was talking about Horizon Forbidden West and I said there's nothing in gaming that is more satisfying than taking down a robot dinosaur, I wasn't lying, but now I feel like I might have been lying because there is something more satisfying, and that is... killing a billion D things that are all swarming you. I remember reading when Diablo 3 was coming out, and all, you know, the Blizzard the developers were talking about how like they just wanted you to feel OP all the time. Like that was the design goal, was like feel OP all the time. There is no more feeling of OP than a perfect or a well-executed Vampire Survivor build in minute 30 when you realize I'm going to win this game. And there is nothing that can stop me. There is nothing. Bring on the hordes! And you just see numbers exploding all around you like fireworks. It is the most satisfying thing in existence. It's a glorious... And who as Anthony said, who could have predicted this tiny little $4 game made by one person that doesn't look like much to even look at it, that can be played with one hand, is so addictive, so fun, so unlike anything I'd played before, as Anthony said. It is starting its own subgenre. There will be Survivor likes. Vampire Survivors likes. There already are. I own a couple of them on Steam, but this is the king. And as much as I think most people will think of Elden Ring when they think of 2022, I will think of Vampire Survivors when I think of 2022.
It also doesn't make it, it's a rogue type that I think doesn't make you think it is, because it's not punishing in its death, because technically it's right. It's like clear map, new thing, new items, new order in which you get them. But it's refreshing in the way that it does that, that it never feels bad. Like, oh, this was the run. I had it. Cause I think you can get close multiple times. I will say, if we're doing one of our favorite podcasting moments of the year, one of my favorite moments of this show, Jeff, was like 2 weeks after you spent an hour talking up the virtues of a garlic based run. And you were, then you came back, you did the Jeff grabs the mic moment and went, I was an idiot. Don't do garlic.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the joy. I mean, Anthony talked about it. That's the joy, is that you, the game funnels you into these different things. You can feel like, oh, I found the key to win. And then you're forced to change it up because the circumstances, and then you discover something new, and how often this game is updated and how much content is constantly being thrown at you. And it's just so satisfying. It's so fun. It's so addictive. Wandering into an area that you haven't been to in a couple of minutes and just seeing the sea of blue dots that you left there is so fun and joyous. And it's just simple, pure, boiled down to the most fun concentration of elements of a role-playing game. Man, what a triumph. What a triumph that game is. Again, made by one person, just a pure idea that worked well and changed gaming. Will change gaming forever. And I think that that's a pretty powerful thing. So, I went back and forth with my list in a lot of ways, but I knew this game way back when we started playing. And also, in a year that really, for me, is defined in a lot of ways by the Steam Deck, this was my first Steam Deck game. This was my first, like, oh, this is perfect on a Steam Deck. The quick resume is perfect for this game. Pick it up and play it for, 20 minutes, as long as you can. It's just so great. It's so great. Vampire Survivors. And now you can play it on mobile. You can play it on Game Pass. It's everywhere. And I think more people are discovering it as well. And, it's phenomenal.
I'm shocked. And I think, any other day we would have recorded this, that's like 50-50 chance it would have made my number five over Bayonetta 3. And if it had made my five, would it have been our show's game of the year?
I think there's still an argument to be made for it. I mean, I think God of War Ragnarok is the easy choice.
I also would not, I'm saying well, right now, it's not on my top five, and I'm not allowed to say any more than that because of you jerks, but I would not be opposed.
Here's what's interesting. Is my number one is your number two, Christian, and my number two is Jeff's number one. And so those, I feel like, cancel each other out, and I feel like it's God of War.
Yeah, because God of War is number four, number one, and number two. That feels pretty powerful.
It does feel pretty powerful.
I mean, it's also the most predictable choice for our show.
Yeah,
but sure. I mean, and I kind of would love Vampire Survivors to be there, but I can't argue with the logic of God of War Ragnarok. And I mean, it's worthy. It's worthy.
Did you play much Midnight Suns? Maybe that will be another five. I don't want to spoil something. I just feel like that was the game that was like, yeah, this is Spark of Hope. This is Jeff's catnip. He's gonna get a divorce.
Midnight Suns is a lot different than Spark of Hope.
It's very different. It's not XCOM.
Card based.
It's not XCOM. But it's still.
But you love card based.
I do love card based. It's still a thing I love. But
and it's dating Iron Man, which you also love doing.
Dude, here's the thing. I need to play more of it, and I'm going to play more of it. I think the voice acting is very bad.
It is very bad.
And so much of the game is listening to the voice acting. So much of it. Very bad. It's very bad. It really shows you the benefit of something like God of War, where they have the actors in a volume acting with each other. Because Marvel
Vacation Simulator, something with top tier.
Yeah. Marvel Midnight Suns is so obviously like we got each person in the booth and they said their 40 lines and they didn't know the line that introduced it. And it just feels like this empty, hollow, soulless delivery, and I feel bad.
They have talent. I think it's the same Spider-Man. I think it's Insomniac Spider-Man voice actor doing Spider-Man. I think they have want to be doing the voices. Doing
there's them. So much story in it. There's much more story than I expected for a Firaxis game, and that's on. I mean, on paper, that's awesome. But every time someone talks, I'm just like, oh, and they're having like Tony Stark is like played as the wisecracking goofball and none of the jokes feel like I think they're well-written jokes. They're just delivered in an empty, you know how that when you do a joke, that's a response to someone, but you didn't hear the prompt. So the rhythm is wrong. The it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's
anyway. But I plan to play a lot more of it.
It's weird. It's weird.
The game that you guys all thought I was going to have as my number one.
Yes.
Which
didn't even make your five.
I know.
Feels like you were trying to trick me and Christian.
Part of my reasoning for not putting it in my top five was to swerve you because I thought it would be fun. But also, like, I have a hard time giving it to that game. That's a pure mobile, like, it's a great, I mean, Marvel Snap is great. It's great and well-designed and worthy of any award it gets. I decided what I would do because we have, you know, other categories that we're going to get to shortly. So I decided to invent a category, which is game from 2022. I'll be playing the most in 2023. And that's Marvel Snap. I feel like that of all the games, even Vampire Survivors, I'll probably be playing more Marvel Snap in 2023 than I play Vampire Survivors in 2023. So I expect to be playing a lot of Marvel Snap this year. Yeah. You know, and it's a great game. It's a great game. All right. Are there any other missing ones on either of your lists? Like, I thought God of War Ragnarok would be your number one, Christian, but I was kind of starting to doubt myself for a moment there, but I didn't know what else might make it.
I mean, things that did not make my list, and you guys will give me crap for, and it's not another five, because I think it got respect it deserved, and it was a big game, and I really thought there was a chance it would be on my list at some point, because I loved it. I still love it, but there's a bigger part of it that didn't keep me, and that's Witch Queen for Destiny 2. Mm. Like, that 8-hour campaign of Witch Queen was some of the best first person shooting video game I've played. A great story. It felt like a complete awesome game. The problem is there was like just enough of like, do next season. And I was like, no. That kind of kept it out. But that is a pure experience. Witch Queen I thought was phenomenal. But it didn't make it.
I agree with that 100%. But yeah, I don't think anything Destiny will ever make my list anymore.
Oh no! Have you had a falling out with Destiny?
No. I still play it. Okay. It's just, you know, there's that, you know, like initial high, kind of like I'm sure you experienced with WoW, of like the initial high of the expansion launch, and then like
okay. I'm flying a lot of dragons right now, so I can't quite relate to that. But yes, I know.
Sure. But okay, in like a month from now, and I'm like, how's that going? You're like,
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. All right, let's get to our five diamonds in the rough. Again, this is not 6 through 10. These are not the games that would make our six. It's probably games that would 6 through 10. As the guys have mentioned, there's the sixes and sevens. These are games that really just deserve to be brought up again. Anthony, I'll let you do all five of yours. I don't know if you put them in order, but I'd love you to go 5 to 1 if so.
Oh no. Okay. So 5 is Metal Hellsinger.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I know that other game, it was like BPM, I think, was the other game that this is similar thing where you're you know, you're pulling the trigger, so to speak, in tune with a beat. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Metal Hellsinger. It's got, you know, it's kind of like Doom. It's got a very kind of hellish set of landscapes, but I really like the soundtrack. I just really enjoyed getting into that flow. I think it's on Game Pass. I might be wrong.
Yeah, it is.
Then Moon Scars, which is a kind of a side scrolling
Souls-like, right?
Yeah. I really enjoyed the art style in that, very kind of muted colors. So the kind of reds of the enemies pops a bit. I always, at least once a year, find a kind of side scrolling Souls like that really resonates with me, and that was Moonscars. Steel Rising, I talked about it on the podcast, I think the last time I was on. It's a Souls like from Spiders, who made Greedfall, and it's set like you're a robot and you're like in Revolutionary France, so you're kind of fighting like. You're fighting for Marie Antoinette and you're kind of going up against some like alternate history people, but you're fighting big giant mechs, very creative art style. I really like the combat. I think they toned it down in such a way that it was really approachable. So it's not like the hardcore Souls like, but I had a good time playing it.
My number two would be Escape Academy.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you loved that. Yeah.
I love the just the kind of like escape room setup.
Yeah.
They're all the puzzles that they do are very well done. There's a hint system if you're, you know, you're not the type of person that, you know, just kind of likes that type of thing, but you do like subtle puzzles. But I always just was like, wow, these are all creative. They don't repeat the same things. And I had a good time with it. And then I guess my number one diamond in the rough is Evil West, which is a game that I think a lot of people love. Cowboy fighting vampires. You know, I was sold on it. The only reason it wouldn't make my top 10 is it gets a little tedious. It starts to throw like it has that problem that a lot of games have where you fight a boss and then the boss becomes a regular enemy. And then the boss, you know, all these bosses become regular enemies, but it throws too many at you. I think that's probably because they offer co-op and they just wanted you to play in co-op. But I really had a ton of fun with it. It's really satisfying. You have like these electro gloves, and so you're just punching monsters in the face. And yeah, the combat's got a really satisfying kind of almost God of War element of, you know, strategic dodges, maybe some parryings, and then just beating monsters up. And a lot of people have said it kind of compares to like the character action games that you used to see in like the 360 era. And I think that's like a perfect description. I highly recommend you check it out, but don't pay like $60 for it. Because most people will probably be like, eh, this isn't so great, but I loved it. I had a great time with it.
That's awesome. Really, really great list. Can you just say the titles again real quick?
Metal Hellsinger, Moon Scars, Evil West, Steel Rising, and Escape Academy, but not in that order.
All right. It's unfortunate that Evil West and Weird West came out the same year. I was like, that's a little confusing, but very cool. Christian Spicer, your five diamonds in the rough.
I mean, I'm going to put this one at number five, but I feel stupid doing it because I did not think that we would talk about it the way we did. I thought it would be a diamond in the rough, but it's clearly not. But I'm still going to say it. Vampire Survivors. I thought it was like it's like we talk about it, but I don't know if like enough people talk about it. So that's why I included it here. Like it's one of those things that's like, yeah, you talk about it, but you don't play it. I'm going to move on. But that I'm going to put it at number five just because of
literally my number one game of the year.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like,
we put it on almost every category for like game awards voting, and it like only ended up on indie. I was like, what are these people nuts?
Yeah. So I'm going to leave it there. We've talked about it enough. Rollerdrome, which I, you know, it's, you're roller skating, not rollerblading, but it's Tony Hawk meets Murder Sim, in a really fun, cool world and environment and an art style, like an aesthetic, the way you do tricks to reload. It really, as you talked about, Jeff, a lot on the show, like indie games kind of doing a thing or finding a thing from other games and then finding a way to make that the game. I think it's really compelling, a really fun world. And I don't think enough folks checked it out. So that'd be four. Three, Elekhead, which I know folks on our Discord have talked about. What a beautiful, fun platformer where the puzzles, I think I had to look up a couple of like solutions, but I love 2D platformers. And Elekhead is, you're this little bot where you take your head off, it's electrified and you can throw it to electrify things in the environment to make things happen. And it does the Mario 1-1 really well of like teaching you a mechanic that then you later use, or showing you something that like, oh, this screen here interacts with this screen in that way. And it teaches by doing in a really effective way, and it did not overstay its welcome. So I really loved Elekhead. And then I would say Neon White, which I think I've seen on some outlets like actual faves, but I still don't think enough people have played. What holds that back for me is I think the anime story is a little, you know, grit my teeth and get through it to get to the next sweet speed run, that the speed runs again, it, you know, at Mario ones very well in terms of teaching by doing. I love it. It's great on Steam Deck. And then Kirby and the Forgotten Land. I
was wondering if that game would make an appearance.
Yeah. I think I need to scream it because people, you know, when they play it, they really like it. And I think it demoed poorly, which I'm hoping for Spoken also just demoed poorly. but that demo they released of Kirby, I don't think did it enough favors in terms of showing you how it unravels. And the final boss battle is, Anthony, you might like it. It's a Souls. No, yeah. It gets harder than other spots of the game. The creativity and the whimsy in it, it's a treat, and it's a Switch game that came out this year that looks beautiful, whereas a lot of Switch games showed the problems of an aging hardware, and Kirby was not one of them. Kirby and the Forgotten Land, it's really, really good. I think that was 5-1-2. Yeah, that was 5.
Very cool. Again, just say those titles.
Yes, sir. Rollerdrome. Oh, Vampire Survivors. Rollerdrome. Alekhead, Neon White, Kirby, and the Forgotten Land.
All right. My 5 dark horses are number 5, Circus Electrique, which was written by our friend of the show, Chris Baker, who was on to promote it. But man, what a cool universe, cool game. It's a Darkest Dungeon-like, but set in a really interesting steampunk circus setting. Really cool game. Underappreciated. Not enough people talking about it. Really dug that game. Moss Book 2. You know, I had to get a VR game in here somewhere. I think this is the best VR game that came out this year that I played, at least. And a worthy sequel to Moss. Beautiful, wonderful, charming, utterly gorgeous. And hopefully more people will get to play it now that when PSVR 2 comes out this next year. Moss Book 2 is great, and I loved playing through it. Nobody Saves the World is my number 3. What an awesome, awesome game this is, where you're mixing and matching powers from all kinds of different characters that you, cobble together, you transform into, and just awesome, incredibly addictive gameplay. I love the art style. Nobody Saves the World, again, too underrated. I think it's on Game Pass. I want to say it's on Game Pass.
It was.
Not anymore?
At least. I don't know.
Mm. Great, great game. Great Steam Deck game. Nobody Saves the World. I will echo Christian's, my number 2, Rollerdrome. Man, this game's awesome! And it's another one of those mashups of disparate styles, like a shooter and a Tony Hawk game? What? How does that work? Oh, it works really, really well. Super cool aesthetic. Tight controls, incredibly fun. I wish there was like 10 times more game there. I wish there was like more to do, but it's a blast, man. I love Rollerdrome. And then my number 1 underappreciated game of the year. I guarantee you I'm the only one talking about this game. I sung its praises on the show in one episode. I wish I should have talked about it way more. I've played so much of this game. I absolutely adore it. It's called Four Tales, F-O-R-E-T-A-L-E-S, Four Tales. And it is a card-based storytelling game, utterly genius. I mean, yes, there's combat, but it is so much more about utilizing your environment, pushing your luck, figuring out ways to move through this world and uncover story elements, all of it expressed through cards. Great art. Awesome world, anthropomorphized animals in this sort of scummy kind of underworld. Really great. Ugh, Four Tales. Not enough people are talking about that game. It's excellent. So there you have it. My top 5, Circus Electrique, Moss Book 2, Nobody Saves the World, Rollerdrome, and Four Tales. Pretty great year in video games, fellas. Are there any other, you know... I was struggling to find a place to put Return to Monkey Island, which I thought was great. I don't know if you guys have any other, you know, just...
I'm glad you shouted the praises of Nobody Saves the World. It's a game that I, you know, I played it. I unlocked all the characters. I did everything in that game. That and Cult of the Lamb were one of those games where it was like, okay, you give me a list of things to do, like all the whatever upgrades to get, I'm going to get all of them. And
yeah,
I love Nobody Saves the World, but it came out, I think, January. So not
yeah,
most people
really early. It. Yeah. It gets swallowed up. You know, people forget about it, but man, what a great game. Great game.
I have 4 others that didn't make that, like my 5 underrated, but I think need to be talked about. Celebrated in a way, and I'll just say the Switch is representing a lot of this. Splatoon 3, I raved about it on this show. Still a great multiplayer game. I don't think enough folks are talking about Splatoon 3. River City Girls 2, caveat on PC. I love brawlers. On PC, you can play with an acceptable frame rate. Yeah. So wait for those console patches. They're coming. A game that we didn't talk about, I thought maybe it would be in someone's top five on Game Pass, Plague Tale Requiem, which is one.
Very good.
Asobo, is that the developer? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
Oh,
I don't know.
My daughter is super into playing. Remember the old Kinect game, Disney Park Adventure or whatever it is? Like,
me and the boy play it a lot.
Yeah, it's you can play it without a Kinect, and my daughter loves it. Same developer. Also, as I was doing the Wikipedia dive, they also did Flight Sim.
Yes.
What an incredibly talented developer.
That's diversity right there, huh?
The other one that could have been, I wrestled with, including on my other fives, because I think it's fantastic and a return to form for the franchise in a lot of ways, and I hope they continue it, is Tiny Tina's Wonderland. I think that came out.
Super fun.
Borderlands 3 kind of soured me on Borderlands, and Tiny Tina's, it's my current drop umbrella in Fortnite, is the unicorn. I'll leave it at that. They got to bring that character over. Tiny Tina's is funny.
Super fun.
It plays well.
Really fun game. Yeah.
Yeah.
The game that I'm surprised none of us brought up is Tunic. I thought, Anthony, you might bring that one up, which I just tried to find a place for as well. And then another game that I think is a worthy sequel to a game that was my game of the year several years ago, Rogue Legacy 2. Great game. Great game. All right, let's do a couple of other side categories. We always do biggest disappointment. I think I know Christian's.
I do. I think I know Christian's.
Will you guess it?
Is it Gotham Knights?
Is it Gotham Knights?
Man, I was torn between Gotham Knights and Pokemon Scarlet Violet.
Really? Wow.
I really loved Legends, and I was really excited about what Scarlet Violet would bring to the table. And so those are the two that, like, because then Scarlet Violet kind of, again, showed the legs of the Switch running out, getting a cramp here this year. But yes, Gotham Knights would be it. But I was torn between those two. Gotham Knights from a studio I loved, and Arkham Origins, I thought was such a fun game, especially after patches. And my favorite character, my favorite comic book character, one of my favorite characters in fiction of all time.
Batman, they kill him.
No, Ra's al Ghul.
I was out.
You know, I'm a big Ra's head. That game really bums me out.
Massive disappointment, that game. Yeah.
It stinks on PC.
I wasn't even looking forward to that game, and it almost made my biggest disappointment. Anthony,
good guess.
What was your biggest disappointment?
My biggest disappointment, Saints Row.
Yeah.
Saints Row the Third resonated with me on a level that I don't know. It was just I was obsessed with dubstep as like a meme at the time. I grew up loving Sublime. There's that sequence where you're singing with the guy who's driving with you. So it has a special place in my heart in terms of the comedy. And I think the combat was really fun and different. And this Saints Row is just generic and bland, and it just doesn't have any of the personality that I liked. It felt like they were trying to be more Grand Theft Auto, but then got some criticisms and tried to like shove some humor in it at the last minute, but it just feels forced. Definitely my biggest disappointment.
That one landed with a thud. I was struggling with this one, actually. I think my biggest disappointment, honestly, was the Starfield delay, but
not fair.
I will say Sonic Frontiers, because it's stupid that it's my biggest disappointment, because you can see it coming a mile away. Like, when's the last time a Sonic 3D Sonic game has not been a disappointment? And yet somehow I got a lot of hope for that game. And it is, there's something about it that's, as we talked in our, discussion of it on the show, there's something about it that's kind of compelling, but ultimately it's a disappointing game, and it could have been a lot better.
I, I love it, but I don't disagree. I love it as a 7.
I also enjoyed it. That
there's something that about it that's fun, but also like it could have been so much better than it is.
Sure.
Yes. So I think it's a disappointment. All right. You guys have a biggest surprise of the year? Anthony.
Go ahead, Anthony.
It really was Evil West.
Mm.
Just because going into it, I think it looked super generic. And in some ways it is. So I'm not going to, but I just had so much. It was one of the few games where it came out at a time, or I got a code at the time where I was just trying to cram everything I possibly could to just make sure I had played it. And then I was like, nope, I got to finish this game. I got to see it through to the end. Yeah. So I think I would say Evil West or maybe Sifu in terms of like how much it resonated with me. And I was able to kind of teach myself to get better at it. I think at the wrong time, I easily could have just bounced off that game immediately, but probably Evil West is my biggest surprise.
Christian?
Marvel Snap.
Yeah. Great one.
Hard games don't do it for me the way they do. You, Jeff, I liked Hearthstone for the littlest of bit, and then I started to see the meta and knew I wouldn't be able to keep up, and I bounced. I have bad experience with collectible mobile games. I have bad experiences with a lot of mobile games, which is why I sing the virtue of the backbone a lot, because you don't have to play quote-unquote mobile games on your phone. Like, I like being able to play games with me, but I rarely like quote-unquote mobile games. And while the progression, as you've talked about on the show, and I think the seasons or whatever they're called happen a little too quickly, for someone who isn't the hardest of hardcore Marvel Snap player, what it does really well. Just the act of playing the game is fun and rewarding. The art is incredible. I love comic books. They didn't skimp on the art department. They didn't skimp on the things that make it feel like a worthy Marvel thing. There was a time where Marvel games weren't that, you know, like the best part of the box was the red Marvel logo. And Marvel Snap is not that. And while I am still nervous about what its monetization might be in the future, I was shocked at how often I would go to it on my phone and squeeze in a game or two here or there. And I also think adding it as a surprise, it's not uncommon that I would imagine all three of us get press releases that tout developers from other great games now making a new thing in that genre. And it's hard to have that lightning strike twice.
Yeah, that's true.
And Marvel Snap is that. That lightning has struck twice 100%. By people who clearly have a great understanding of what makes those types of games click. And I was not expecting it to be as good as it is.
Great point. Great point about lightning striking twice. Yeah. I put my biggest surprise is the Steam Deck, because I did not think that thing was going to be as compelling, as essential to my life as it has become.
Yeah, you didn't want it. I didn't want it before me.
Yeah. I literally didn't. I didn't think I wanted it. But it has, it exceeded every expectation I had, and it has become like a go-to essential life thing for me. And yeah. Shocked. I was shocked how much I love the Steam Deck. I really thought, what do I need this for? It's COVID. I don't go anywhere. I got a PC. What do I want this for? No, it has been a delight and a really cool piece of tech. You know,
I heard next year they're making a super ultra wide Steam Deck.
Ooh, give me that. Just hold it. That was amazing. I would buy that. all right. Any other categories that you guys have, or we can wrap this up?
Well, what's your Marvel Snap category? What
game from 2022 I'll be playing most in 2023 is Marvel Snap.
I will say, I teased at the beginning, Sony fanboy category of the world. They make games I love. I could not get Gran Turismo 7 on my list anywhere. I've dumped dumping it means I regret them. I have poured hours into Gran Turismo 7. I think it's a phenomenal game. The Last of Us Part 1, we joked about. It's beautiful, and it brings the combat of Part 2 into Part 1, and it makes that game feel fresh in a way that, yes, they've already done a remaster, but it's the definitive way to play the game. It's absolutely incredible. Sure.
These aren't categories. And, they're just listing more games yeah. that you want.
No, I'm saying by category is Sony's year.
Sony's year.
Sony's 2022.
Gotcha.
And I think what they did in the PC space, like really, yeah. really good going PC ports. I wish they would come out sooner. Yeah. But Spider-Man on the beefy GP, Miles Morales on the beefy GP. I guess Miles was a 2022 game. Remastered was last year on PC. Uncharted on PC is great. And Horizon Forbidden West, stunning, stellar, top of their, you know, firing on all cylinders, making great games within a lane, arguably. Yeah. But it is my Death lane.
Stranding on PC, also.
Yeah.
I think the game that. It's Gotham Knights, actually, because I'm just waiting for them to continue. I actually didn't mind it. I liked it.
Really? That's so bad.
I didn't. No, I actually didn't mind it. You know, I love me a loot game.
You do.
And I love me those grindy games. And when I first played it, I was like, this needs some patches. I've just kind of been waiting for them to, like, you know, kind of refine the PC performance. And then, maybe once I get more, I want to say 6 hours, and I was like, this is not that bad. Or actually, I'm enjoying it. A stirring
endorsement.
Well, I don't know.
It's not that bad.
Because most of the game, like when 2023 rolls around, if there's like not some lingering stuff, I slice the year off. I'm like, gotta focus on the next year. But I've been waiting for Gotham Knights to kind of like patch its. To patch itself together in a way that probably the game I will be playing in January.
All right, that, I feel like Midnight Suns is that game for me that I'm going to be playing most in January if I can get over the voice acting, which is not good. The other biggest surprise I had, Christian, and maybe it's obnoxious to bring it up again, but is DLSS 3.0. I literally am downloading games. Just that I look at the list of what supports DLSS 3.0 and I want to play it. It is
Need for Speed. You got it. That got to be a January game for you. Need for Speed Unbound.
Have you played Plague Tale on PC?
Jeff? I have been playing Plague Tale just because of the DLSS 3.0.
Yeah.
It's butter. It's gorgeous. But yes, dude, Christian, this is not the episode to talk about it, but I have been playing Unbound. It's awesome. It's awesome. Dude, the Into the Spider-Verse effects work so well. And I didn't realize they like communicate information to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah. Anyway, from now on, if a game has DLSS 3.0, I am going to give it a shot because it is that impressive. It is that much of a plus one to me.
I found myself going back to Henry Cavill 40K quite a bit also because it's there on the top of my Steam page. I'm like, I've got more time than Vampire Survivor, but less time than, you know, like other game.
I've been replaying Marvel Spider-Man on PC. This is the most gorgeous game in the world. It's sick. Anyway, that's our 2022. And hey, congratulations to God of War Ragnarok for getting DLC's Game of the Year, the consensus of our show's Game of the Year. Really, really amazing and worth.
Is it the first? Is it the first prequel or
sequel double, thing? Yeah,
double that has won both twice.
I think so. I think so. And worthy, very worthy. This has been a delight. It's always my favorite episode. Next week's is a good one too. Next week, Christian and I will be doing our predictions as we do every year. We have a reckoning from last year's predictions, and we will make bold and cool rants predictions for 2023. You don't want to miss that.
I had a good year, Jeff.
Have you gone back and listened? I think you have too.
I wrote it down when I did it. And I put check marks next to them when they come true, baby.
I think I had a very bad year, actually. Last year I had a good year, but this year I think I had a bad one. Anyway, I'll make up for it in 2023. Anthony Taormina, thank you so much for being here as you are every year. You are an essential part of our show, and we're grateful to have you. Thanks, buddy.
Yes, I
like I said, look forward to it. It's, you know, it's getting together with my friends and talking about video games. I don't think there's anything better in the world than that.
Agreed. Agreed. Hey, tell folks where they can keep up with all the things that you do online.
So I'm editor-in-chief of GameRant.com. So if you just kind of want to support me, we'd love if you read our content. As we do around this time of year, we put out a lot of top lists, you know, best looking game, best co-op game, best multiplayer game, best games that came out on Game Pass, best, you know, all kinds of stuff. So if you want to, if you're looking for a variety of different lists, you're looking for some recommendations for games in 2022 that aren't just the best or specific categories, we have a lot of those. And then you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at AntTormina, AntTormina.
Christian, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
I think I talked about at the end of last week's show, and it hasn't started officially yet, but the teaser is out. Mr. David Chen and I will be decoding TV for HBO's The Last of Us when that starts on January 15th is when the premiere, and then our episode will come out. I think Dave's rules within 48 hours of the episode coming out is when our episode will come out. So I'm very excited about that. Like I said, the teaser episode, like five questions we have about the show, that episode has been released. No spoilers. What I love about Dave and Decoding TV is the way he approaches shows from the viewer's perspective. So even though he and I have both played the games, we will be going into this HBO series with first-time viewers, and there won't be spoilers for like what happens later, and we'll be on that ride for, I imagine, you know, based on trailers I've seen, of additional content and how they bring that show to the TV screen. So we're very excited about that. That's at Decoding TV, where you can find all of that fun stuff when it starts hitting in earnest next year.
I'm excited about the segment that you'll do in each episode where you guys just talk about me.
I mean, it's usually like, how would Jeff being here make it better? usually as I do a haiku, Dave does a sonnet.
Yeah.
We don't want to step on your bit.
Good. So, I appreciate it.
Yeah. and then I write a newsletter that you can subscribe to for free at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. The last one that went out was my favorites, not games of the year. So things that weren't video games that I really loved. And you can subscribe to that. And if you want to get in touch with me and kind of ping and say hi and chit chat, the best way, honestly, is probably DLC's Discord is where I'm hanging out, spending most of my time as, you know, social media continues to burn.
Discord's a great place, though, man. Great place.
It's a great place. It's a great place. Fantastic. There's a group of folks in there. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, they're doing their favorites of the year right now. So you can get in on that as well. You can still find me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. Again, if you want to email us here, it's dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. Let us know any games that we egregiously missed. It would be fun to fun to see that. You can also, again, the Discord, 5x5 DLC is the Discord. There's also a subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Check those out. I have other shows. I do a show with Dave Chen as well. It's called The Film Cast. Devinder Hardwar is also there. Yep. We talk about movies and TV shows. You can find that wherever you get podcasts. I also do a comedy science show with Anthony Carboni. I almost said Termina, but Anthony Carboni, called We Have Concerns. And a sports show called The Fan Controlled Show. You can find all of that wherever you get podcasts. I'd love you to check them out. And that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Anthony Taramina, Christian Spicer. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star. Again, madigan.me is where you get Sean Madigan and his family's Christmas song and other music.
Also on your streaming service where they get paid pennies, but like they're there.
Yeah.
You can, we've added all of his Christmas songs to our Christmas playlist.
So good. They're so good.
They're all great.
We heard last year's again, the one about the witch. It was great.
Yes. Yes.
All right. The biggest thanks, of course, go to our patrons for making the show possible. We're extremely grateful for all of you. We're grateful for everybody that listens. And those of you that find value in us and give value back, thank you at patreon.com/dlcpod. our hype train patrons, that's our top tier patrons, they get their names read out at the end of every episode. So I'm going to do that right now. That's right. During this holiday season, it is especially wonderful to look at our top tier patrons and give them thanks. I'm talking about patrons like Wonder Rob, Kevin Ede, Steven Seifert, Joe DeFrank, Brian Yordan, Scott Lambert, Hyperboy66, David F., Shoryuken, comedian Aaron Trahan, Curtis from Louisville, John Cisco, Matt Valdez, Relentless Rex, Michael S., Andy Joyce, Anthony Gulas, Kyle Starr, Kylie Knox, Dan Flanagan, Sasan, Rob Rickman, Hank Patton, Adam Denby, Cheesy Bob, Scooby Diesel, Jonathan Talbert, Victor Valenzuela, Matt Bradley, Chris Zacharias, Will with 1L Harris, Jeff Luxak, Mitchell Ness, Jonathan Putney, Mark Gowland, Jimmy Radcliffe, Malcolm King, Dan Palmino, Scott Hughes, Ben, Kevin Brazel, Stu Goss, Nate, Zachary White, Jenny, Jonathan Spiceman Forever Schlepfer, Yick, Albert of the Stuff and Junk Show podcast, The Spiceman Silencer, Soren Silk, Travis, Mike Lombardo, Michael Buck, Jackson, Michael Stadler, Nick Strauss-Klein, Peter Olberg, Jad, Josh Peek, Christian Bravery, Taylor Wiggert, Octavian Ratsiu, and Jason Novak. Thanks to all of you for filling our stockings this holiday season. All right. Thanks again for being here. We'll see you next week to ring in 2023. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.